Okay, we're starting at the top of Samach Tet Amud Aleph. We left off yesterday with the statement of Rav Nachman, or at least the test of statement of Rav Nachman, who said Allah is like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Ben Gamliel. The Gemara concluded that it wasn't Hilchas Itmar, but rather Shita Kamar, that they're all in the same Shita, not necessarily that he was passing the Allah this way. So now, right after that, we have a statement from Rav. I'm a Rav. Motar shlish b'sarcha harizeh mutar. So Rav says a relationship which suggests that whatever is in excess, right? For instance, they have a partnership where they assess an animal and said that you'll bring up the animal and then we'll split the profits in the end. Now, the downside and the upside belongs to this individual. So in the past we saw that was a problem because you're working on the tzad hamilveh for free, right? Even though the other side is a tzad pikadon. So when you're working for free because of the milveh, then we consider it as if it was imputed interest or effective interest on the loan because you're not taking a salary out of this. So now, the way it's structured, the way this partnership is structured is that whatever is above one-third of the profit, actually it's not clear. Rashi says it's shlish demalv shelach shav, means one-third of the price of the day, a third of the profit, like that. I think the Rambam quotes it as a third of the actual profits. But whatever's in excess of the third above the market value today, right, that will be your payment or your salary. What's below that, we will split evenly. And the excess profits will be yours as your salary. So that's what Rav suggests, that such a relationship is fine. Because you are compensating him, you are giving him a salary, and the excess profits above the one-third level. That's fine.
Is that a salary?
No, it's not a salary. But that's the profits in the... That's the profits of his investment. Each one of them invested 50% in this animal. Now, one of them did it as a loan. He lent them the money, and so he invested the money in the animal. The other one invested it because it was his animal. So they each invested 50%. That's the return on their investment. Now, this other, the active partner is working on the animal and bringing it up and feeding it, and then he's not getting compensated for it. Since he's not getting compensated, we said that was effective interest on the loan. So here, Rav suggests that if he gets excess profits, if he gets the profits above one-third, that's enough to be qualified as a salary. Now, Tosfos points out over here that you must say, right, that v'yishlamar d'hocha kilu rabbanan mishum d'shechichei tuva she mutar shlish. That you say that the rabbanan over here have to believe that, otherwise it's sarachad b'ribit, because there's two possible outcomes. One possible outcome is it's above a shlish, and then he gets a salary. The other possibility is below a shlish and he's not getting a salary, which is basically tzarachad ribit. And we know Rav doesn't pass on like Rabbi Huda, that tzarachad ribit is mutar. So Tosu says it must be that it's so common that it exceeds a third, a profit of a third, that already is qualified as a salary. We won't even look at it as a tzarachad ribit. Similar to what we saw yesterday in Tosu by the Beit Zimizurot, right, with the eggs that don't make it fully, that don't fully become. Right, Efrochim, that was considered payment, and again, Tosfos said over there, was a possibility she doesn't get any. Whereas he said over there also, that it's so common that we don't think of it as, right, Halach the Beit HaRikan, that he goes empty-handed to his house. So Tosfos again, we see in a number of places, says this idea, that if the setting, even though there's risk in the set salary, but since the risk is so minimal, and you're not getting paid, we consider it as if that is a valid salary, and that will take away the problem of Rivit over here. Delamar Shmo Kotis lo dinar, that he gives him a dinar to effectively become his salary, and that will be sufficient. So Tosfos points out, the top Tosfos over here, so that before we said that Rav Nachman passed an halacha like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So then we said that was Shidacha, not halacha atchad. So the Rabbeinu Tam says, Makom halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Nevertheless, the halacha like Shimon Gamliel, that Gvalalim, will be enough compensation. And Tosfos says, Veneira. Doesn't make sense. The Rabu Shmuel Bow, Ovik Zotzinar, O Rich Aglov Tuma. We're going to see in a second, Rab requires. They required some sort of payment that was more than simple dung. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Lo Payel Glolim. The Glolim were sufficient to be considered the salary. So they said, no, that they needed something above it. So even though the Rabbeinu Tam says, the Lachas of Rav Shimon Gamliel, Tosfos disagrees and says that he thinks that there's the demands here of Rav and Shmuel seem to be in excess of what Rav Shimon Gamliel said, and therefore the halacha wouldn't be like it. They need more than just simply dung. You need some other, you need some real form of payment, right, that is a consideration for the work that the active partner is doing. So now the Ein Kol Tzitzin Lo Dinar, does Rav really hold that you don't have to give him any money, meaning that it's enough to say Motar Shlish and everything's fine? Rav Rav, Reish Aglo Tuma. You have to give in a salary, in a partnership, where you have an active and passive partner, right? And again, that the active partner has borrowed money, so if you don't pay him a salary, it'll be effective interest. Over there, Rav says that the active partner gets the head. Gets the head of the animal when they split it up. And in addition to the 50-50 split, he gets the head. And that is his salary. So my love, Damrlei, Motar Shlish B'Scharcha. Isn't that the case where he said Motar Shlish B'Scharcha and he still demands Eresh Pituma, Eresh Iglai, still demands of giving him a head? No, the Karmelei, I Motar Shlish, Eresh Iglai Liftuma. No, that's the option. You have an option as the active partner here who's borrowed the money to get your payment for your in-kind payment for your active participation here, either to be the profits in excess of a third, or the head of the animal, you pick. Whichever one you like is fine, but either one is sufficient, according to Rav, to consider the salary of the active partner, so that it'll no longer be considered a problem of rebate.
So that case is fine, if there's no Mozart Schlitz, so he's got the head of the...
No, he has to pick beforehand, not later on. It's not later on, but rather up front, you pick which one you want.
Okay, but he ends up with, if he picks the Rosh,
then it's fine. If he picks the Rosh, it's done in a question, but he can still pick Motar Shlish, and Rav says that's okay.
That's just not an addition to it.
Right. See, by Tema, so some people, there's another reading, Ki Kama Rav Motar Shlish B'Skarcha Mutar, Gon De'itlei Behema L'Didei. So Rav qualifies his statement of when you're allowed to use this Motar Shlish B'Skarcha works, is when he has his own animals. The Amri Inshe Gvil L'Torah Gvil L'Torah. That gvil here means from the gabel, which is to mix, to knead. That when you make the feed for your animal, you just add a little more, you make the feed for the other animal. It's kind of like the pitka nelecha nelemeya. That if you're already feeding and taking care of your animal, to take care of one more animal is not a lot of excess work. And therefore, since it's not a little, so much extra for you to take care of the other animal, then with a minimum amount or a minimum salary, that's enough to be consideration for the work that you're doing, because you're really not doing so much more, so much extra effort when you don't have your when you have your own animals in these instances. All right. So
a similar thing would be if an investor who has his own money that he's investing and he borrows someone else's money to invest as well.
Right.
And
so if he's already doing the work for himself, and it would be really no extra work to do the put the extra money to work, but there it can't just be that he borrows money. If he borrows money, he can do whatever he wants with it. He has to be borrowing money plus managing money for that individual to become a problem like this. The other person hands him money and says, "I'll lend you half of it. Will be a loan to you, and half of it will be my money." Then that's and he's already managing his own money. Then you could say it that way. Right? Rabbi Lezer mihagronia zaven behema. He purchased an animal. If they have lately, I would say, he gave it over to his sharecropper, right? Mefatim le, v'yav le, reisha be'agre. So then, he basically gave it to a sharecropper to bring it up for them. Now, when he gave it to a sharecropper, it was done as a partnership. The sharecropper was the active partner. The animal entirely belonged to, right, of Elazar mehagronia. So he gave him 50% of the upside, and he kept 50% of the upside, but he also, the Arise, his sharecropper was exposed to the downside. So this is the exact cases of our Mishnah. So what did he do to pay the salary of the active partner of the Aris? He gave them the Reisha of Egre. He gave him the head of the animal for the work that he did as the active partner. And then he gave him half the profits. Beyond that, they split the profits. So the head went to the Arise for his work, for his taking care of the animal and fattening it. And then they split the profits after the head. So that takes care of the problem, because now there is a salary for his individual. So now, of course, I'm related to Bitu. His wife says to him, "Imishtatefet behadei yarblechnami aliyoto." She goes, "Listen, you know, he's giving you the head, and you're not even owning part of the animal. I bet you, if you go with him 50-50, if you own 50% of the animal, not only will he give you the head, he'll give you 50% of the tail." Right. So his wife got thought, you know, the logic. So Tosfos says, "What's the logic behind this? I mean, what type of logic is that?" His wife thinks, "Oh, he gets the head when they are." right? When they're not partners. So if they're partners, he's going to get even more. What was she thinking? What type of logic is it? So Sosa suggests that the logic was that says Veishlamar Shnatati Fimo Yatorach Bechatziosh Rabbi Lazar Bechinam. That when they be a partnership, it'd be working in Rabbi Lazar's side for free. Okay, Namra Yeblach Nami Aliyato. Because you're not getting paid at all for his side. I mean, that when it is, why is he giving him the head in this instance? He's giving the head in this instance because the animal's bark, half of it is a milveh, and half of it is a pikadon. That half is a pikadon, you're working for free because of the, right? And therefore, he has to get a salary because of the milveh part. So what she's saying is, okay, now he's compensating you for that. Now, what happens if they give you the animal, you guys are 50-50 in with the animal, and then you go ahead and work the animal, you're working his 50% for free. If he's working your 50% for free, then maybe he'll give you the tail this time. Even the tail, he'll give you something to that effect. That's his way. Active partner, he should give you some form of compensation. Even though there's no problem with repeat anymore, he should compensate you. So, of course, he listens to his wife. Right? So he says, Azal Zavin Bahadeh. Right, so then he went ahead and purchased. They went in together, jointly into an animal. They purchased an animal jointly. Paligle Maliyata. He split the tail with him. So he says, Amarle, and he says, Ta Niflige the Risha. So Rabbi Elazar Maragonia says to him, let us go now and split the head. So Amarle, Hashta Kumikara Namilo. He says, all right, so you didn't split the tail with me, but at least give me the head like you used to give me the head before. Says Amarle, Ada Yidnazuzidide Havu. Until this point, the money was all mine. The entire investment was mine. If I didn't give you a little more, if I didn't compensate you, it would look like interest. That's why you were getting the head. Now we're partners. So now, okay, we're partners, which is good. So now we don't have a problem. So now what's going to be your claim against me, which is true. This should be true of any partnership. We discussed this yesterday. When you have an active and passive partner that work, the active partner always takes a salary out before they split the profits afterwards. So you say, okay, you did a little more work because you took care of the animal, you fattened it up in our partnership, you should get something. Amre, Inche Stama Risa Lamari Ara Kemishabit Nafshe, Tuyile Rayo, says that an aris, generally a sharecropper, right, is Mishubad, is encumbered to the person he works for, to the Baal, in order to take care of the animals, to bring the animals to where they have to feed and to eat and to graze. I mean, that even though truthfully, the Baal HaBayit should be providing the food or a portion of the food. He says, I'm paying 50% of the food. I'm paying for half the feed. And therefore, the Baal HaBayit should also have to pay for 50% of the effort to feed the animals and take them out to graze or what do they have to do. So he says, that is true in general, that the active partner should be entitled to that. Again, not because of rebates, not because of anything else, but that should be the way that one treats, right, an active partner, that he gets a salary. But over here, he says, you're an aris. And your status of an aris, right, there is a general obligation on an aris. When you're hired, and that's everybody knows, that the aris will take care of the animals. He takes care of the animals, he's going to take them out to graze, and that is part of your, right, deal as the aris. You don't get excess compensation, additional compensation for doing that. So he says, that little extra that you're doing, is not you're not entitled to any salary for that, because that's part of your job description as an aris. So Tana Rabbanan, Ashambe Malachai Baro, Admatai Chayav the Tepelba. Person, when they assess the value of the animal, meaning that this is the partnership that our Mishnah discussed, is where they assess the value of the animal day one, and then he's going to work for it for half the profits. Until what point does he have to work? Meaning that what is considered to be the normal, right, duration of such a relationship? Sumchus Amar Batunot, Shmonasar Chodesh. Right, when it comes to the donkeys, it's a 18 months. Begodrot, Chavdalek Chodesh. And Godrot, which are the, as a synonym probably for Behemataka, because they stay in the Ged there. Right, then Chavdalek Chodesh, 24 months. Vimbalach Lok Betoch Zmano, Chavero Makevalev. And if he wants to break up the partnership before that, his friend can demand of him to continue the partnership. He does not have a right to dissolve the partnership within that period of time. Aval, enu domet tipula shoshana zu, tipula shoshana acheret. This year is not like the other year. Ella, the fish, enu domet tipula shoshana zu, tipula shoshana acheret. So Mar says, I skipped the line in between, because my aval kamar, what does it mean, except? Mar says, what do you mean, except? My answer is, that despite the fact that he can't break it up, this year's work, right, is not like the other year's work. The question is, what is this year and what is the other year? And that they gave 24 months, right, in which you could demand it up to, right, provide and take care of this animal once you're into contract to do such a relationship where you're going to bring up the animal for the profits. So what does it mean? Which year is harder? Is the first year harder or the second year harder? So Rashi brings two interpretations down. He quotes one interpretation, which is Shetzricha b'shniya l'mezonot merubim yoter min harishona. The animal in the second year requires much more feed than in the first year. So it wouldn't be fair, right, to break up the partnership based on this. It wouldn't be fair to break up the partnership after 1 year because the additional hotzaot, the additional expenses are really going to come in the second year where you have to feed, put up a huge amount for the feed of the animal. So therefore, since that is the minhag of the mekablim, that he could stop them. Now, Rashi says, "Vanishimati ibcho." I heard the opposite. In ba'bal abehima lachlok b'tok zmano. Here we are suggesting that it's the right, it's the active partner who's bringing up the animal who wants to split up, and the ba'al abehima, the owner of the animal, can stop him because the second year is where he has to put up all the money for the mizonot. So if he backs out of the partnership after the first year, his expenses are much lower. The big expenses that he's going to hit in order to bring the animal for his second year. So we can say that the Baal HaBayit can be makif alav because he wants him to finish up the process, get to the final stage. But Rashi says no, that it's from the tzad of the Baal HaBehema, the owner of the animal itself, wants to back out. So in that case, he can't do it. Why? So Rashi says that Baal HaBehema l'chlok b'toch z'mano makabel makif alav. The one who the active partner is bringing up can stop him. L'fi sheno domeh tipula. Shetipul shana rishona kasheh mishel shniya. That the first year is much harder than the second year, b'neshi daka, because the animal is a baby then, it's young. And to feed it takes much more effort, and to take care of it takes much more effort. Tipulam rubalach nisloti, you have to bring it in, take it out. All the tipulim of a younger animal are much higher than the bigger animal. Tipul shana shniya kal, ushvacham ruba. So the value of the animal will be great in the second year. It'll go up in a tremendous amount of value, and he will have to expend very little to get that additional value. So to him, to the one who, the active partner, the one who's taking care of the animal, it's much better the second year than the first year. So he wants the contract to go to its end. So here all of a sudden the Baal HaBayit comes in and he says, you know what, I'm done. Halfway through. Halfway through, it's a bad deal for him. The animal went up in some value, but he's put all the expenses in that first year, all the investments in that first year. So he says to him, that's what the Gemara is saying here, is that he can be ma'akev. That he can stop. The active partner can say, no, I want to go to the duration of the contract. Alright, so. But Rashi says, Kasher, says that interpretation I have a problem with. The second year is much easier than the first year. What does it mean that he has to take care of it? So the Lashon in the Gemara, Chayav L'Tapelba, sounds like that the obligation is on the active partner. Right?
It sounds like
he's the one trying to back out. Right? If he's the one trying to back it out, it sounds like the second year is easier than the. It sounds like the second year is harder than the first year, and he will benefit from breaking up the partnership in the first year where he put in less money and he got the profits. Right? Either way, it sounds like there's an obligation on both parties to carry out. I mean, this is a minhag makom to do it for 24 months, and therefore, once they enter into such agreement, neither party has the right to back out unilaterally from such a relationship. Of course, if they agree to back out, that's fine, but if they don't agree, then they have to go through the duration of 24 months, k'minhag makom. So that's the agreement up front. All right, Tanya Yidach, we have another price. Sham Bei Malach Haviro, Ad Matai Chayav L'Tapel B'Vladot. How long do you have to take care of the babies? I mean, that the babies are also going to be split. Part of the schar of bringing up an animal is that the animal reproduces in that period of time, then the vladot, the babies that are born to the animal, will also be split 50-50 between the two partners. Now, when the babies are born, right away, you have 50% that belong to me, and 50% now that belong to the other partner. Now, when I take care of the animals, that means I'm taking care of his animals, right? Bechinam. If I'm bringing him taking care of the vladot, that's my vladot. When I take care of his vladot, that's not part of our agreement. Why? Because my agreement is to take care of the older behemah, right? The mother, in the sense that we have an agreement. I get half the profits, therefore I'm taking care of it. But over here, right, why am I taking care of the little babies? The babies, I don't get half the profits of the babies. So now, there is an agreement where there was a din b'daka lamajom with a right, the domesticated type of animals, the sheep, right? And goats, right? There is 30 days. Ubegasa, the larger work animals, right? They are for 50 days. They're obligated to do it. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Bedaka Gimel Chadashim. The young animals, it's for 3 months. Mipneshi Tipula Ruba, because it has takes a lot of work. My Tipula Ruba Mipneshi Shena Dakot. Right, from that point, because its teeth are thin, it's unable to eat so well, so you have to help it out.
Are we assuming these lesser races, when he's a Shambema, that they're only sharing the profit, but they're not sharing the loss?
I assume these are the same cases we had before, where there's a loan involved, that he lends him half the partnership.
Right, and so he has to be giving him something.
Salary, he has to give him a salary, right.
So we're just assuming either they're not sharing the loss, or he's going to
give a salary. Yeah, this is done in a way that's mutar. Yeah, that's the assumption here. All right. Before I skip, the Rashi says that, and Rashi points out that the Lamed Yom and the Nun Yom are based on a paradigm that we see by Bechor. Right, by Bechor, Yisrael, before he gives it to the Kohen, has to take care of the Bechor up to a certain point before he hands it to the Kohen. So these are the same durations of time that Yisrael is obligated to take care of the Bechor before he hands it over to the Kohen. So they're using that paradigm, they're using those same amounts of time for how long the person is responsible for the animal before he gives it back to the original owner. Now, Mikan Melech, what happens if the owner does not take it back after that point in time? Noto mechsa shalo, b'chatzi mechsa b'shel chavero. So now, let's think about what happened with the prophets here. There are babies born. Say there are four babies that are born. Four babies that are born. Two belong to the active partner, the person who is taking care of the animal for his half of the profit. He gets two of them. Two of them belong to the original owner of the animal because he gets 50% of the profits also. Now, the days, 30 days pass, 50 days pass. Now he's no longer obligated to take care of the animals. He can hand them back to the original owner. Now, if the original owner doesn't take them back at that point in time, what does he become now? For the two animals that are his, they belong to him. All the profit is his. He can do whatever he wants with them. The two animals that belong to the original owner, right now, once he's passed the limit of time where he is obligated to take care of those animals, what is he now entering into? He's entering into a new agreement with the Baalim to split the profits on these animals, because he's no longer obligated to keep these animals. And if the owner leaves them with him, they're basically coming now into a new effective agreement, which is that you will take care of these animals for half the profit. So that's what the Gemara says. Mikan Beilech, Noto Mechsa Shalo. He takes the two animals that are his, he keeps. V'chatzi Mechsa B'shel Chevero. The additional two animals, now he'll split. He'll take one and the owner will take one, because basically he gets 50% of the schar for bringing up these additional two babies that really belong to the owner. Rav Nashi Bergado, Shako Mechsa Shalo, V'chatzi Mechsa Shel Chevero. He took his half, right? And he took, right, half of his friend's half. Exactly our case here with the Refladot. Went beyond the limit, he did that. After the coming day, he said, he came to Bayer Malay, Man Halaglecha. He says, who split this for you? Who divided up the, right, who divided up the animals and gave you an assessed value so that you can determine how to divide here? Ba'od. Malkom Shnagula Gadelhu. We're in a place, which we're going to see in a Mishnah coming up, where the minhag is that you have to bring up the Vladot. It's not. Malkom Shnagula Gadel, Yagdilu. So that in a place where the minhag is that you have to continue to bring up the animals, that does not entitle you to anything, because that's part of the minhag of makom. The agreement is whoever brings up for machzit zchar also brings up the vladot of the owner, not without any additional compensation. That's part of the original deal. Your chatzit zchar includes taking care of the vladot. So over here, number one, you're not entitled to split, because this is a minhag of makom, and you're not. Minhag of makom is that you have to take care of them. Number two is, even if you are going to split, right, when you split, you have to have some sort of a value assessment. How do you know what chatzis schar is for these animals if you don't take an assessed value at the point in time where you're dividing? So you're not entitled to do that. So how do you trade putai? These two putim, I don't know if the here, the Gemara is assuming using the term, in places the Gemara uses them putai to be for non-Jews, right, in general, as a borrowed term to be used for non-Jews, or these really were putim. Davud iska b'hadei hadadi. They had a partnership. They had a some sort of partnership together. Azo chad minayu polig zuzei below date de chaberei. One of them went ahead and divided up. He divided the partnership. He dissolved the partnership. And without the knowledge of his family, he unilaterally dissolves the partnership. And he gives him half the money. And he takes half the money. Ato the kamei derab papa. They came before b'gam papa amalei. Mainaf kamina. He says, what's the difference that he split up? Rav Nachman says, zuzei kaman depligi damo. Money is like it's split already. Meaning that, as opposed to other objects that need a value assessment in order to divide them, When it comes to cash, you can just divide up. Cash, you just count, and half belongs to you, and half belongs to me, and there's nothing to divide. You don't need expert value assessments to divide or dissolve the partnership because it's money. And money is very easily divisible. Hashana, the next year, Zabin Chamra Bahadei Adadi, they went into partnership again in wine. The guy didn't learn his lesson. They went into partnership with wine. Kam Idach, then in this instance, the one who complained in the first time that the other partner had dissolved it unilaterally, he dissolves it unilaterally this time. He divides it, he dissolves the partnership without his knowledge of his friend. Atul Kamedra Papa, they came for Man Palagloch. What assessment did you get of the wine that you were allowed to dissolve the partnership and split the value? So he says, Amalei, Kachazina, Debatanim, Tidei, Kaatimar. I see that you favor my friend, that you really like my friend. Every time you're paskening like my friend. When he dissolved it unilaterally, right, then you said, no problem. I dissolved it unilaterally, you're saying, what are you doing? How could you do such a thing? He says, you're always favoring my friend. So Amar Papa, no. Pi Gavna Vadei Tzarech Lildei. Your case is different. Your case, you definitely have to let him know why. Zuzei Mishakil Tavi Vishavik Chasrei. By money, there is no difference. What, you're going to take, he's going to take the good coins and leave you the bad coins? Nah, money is, right, oh, it's fungible. Oh, it's the same. You can divide it up. Chamro Kuli Amayadi Dika Dabasim Vika Dalobasim. Right, wine, there's different qualities of wine, whether different tastes, different qualities, and therefore you have to get it assessed to know what the true value of the wine is to split it up properly. So again, what Papa is suggesting over here, which is important, that is, that a dissolution of a partnership, right, when it's obvious what the value of the partnership is, then you can unilaterally dissolve the partnership because there's no, right, subjective assessment over here. All there is division of the monies. Division of the monies, that we can do without any problem. On the other hand, when it comes to objects, where there is some sort of subjective value assessment here, we don't allow one of the partners to make that assessment without the knowledge, right, or consent of the other partner, because when it becomes subjective already, there's a chance that he could cheat him out of the other money. Now, Tosfos over here discusses whether that is a general principle in splitting of partnerships or dissolution of partnerships, or is that unique to this case? Right, meaning, because he says, first, Tosfos claims, Mashma dafka hacha, b'fisha yilo pitkon pe l'chashdo, kamar. That only because one of the partner suspected the other partner, to tzerech l'udei mishum ha'itim nikim in'er Hashem omnei Yisrael. That because of that idea that when there's suspicion, in order to be above board and be clear, totally clear, we tell you, tell the other partner and don't dissolve it. But otherwise, al ba'amalo, if there's no suspicion between the partners, we'd say, go ahead and dissolve it. Tosfos later on rejects that, and he says v'yesh mefarshim that even every case you have to let him know, right? Because whatever it is that is not automatically easy divisible and known value, you're going to have to let your partner know. Which seems to me to make a lot more sense over here that you would have to always let the partner know. You can't unilaterally dissolve when there's any subjectiveness to the dissolution of the partner, even without suspicion. It would make a lot of sense. Right now, Gufa, we're back to the statement of Rav Nachman. Whenever Rav Nachman zuzei command to plige dam. That money is as if it's divided already. Because since money is fungible, right, then dividing up money is easy. So, hani mile, tavi vitave, tkule vitkule. He says, Rav Nachman that says, or we qualify the statement of Rav Nachman, that's only if all the coins are the same. That's all if they're all good coins or they're all heavy shekel coins. Aval tavi vitkule lo. But when it comes to different types of coins, we won't allow you to divide it because then there is different people says put different values on coins. For instance, tave are coins that are easily used as currency. They are good surah on them, they're not heavy, and they're easily used as currency. On the other hand, tekule don't have as good a surah, but they're heavier coins, so people want to use them as counterweights, or as assessing value of other coinage, would want those coins. So, depends on what the usage is, and depends on people's view of what their necessity for the coins is, would make them favor one coin or the other. And therefore, if you subdivide coins, you can't take, even though the monies are the same, you can't take a coin, equivalent monies, and split them up in different coinage. You have to split the coinage as well to give each person the same advantage in the coinage or denominations of the money that is being split. Now, this is an unbelievable case here. So the Rav Chama, Hava Mugar Zuzei Bipshita. Chama used to rent out his money. Right, Pshita Liyoma, it's actually Pshita Liyoma, right? So Chama Mugar is a Pshita Liyoma. He used to rent out his money for a day. So he used to rent money. So to get around the problem of Mibit, instead of charging interest for his money, he rented out his money. He says, I'm going to rent out my money, and therefore it won't be Mibit. Like, I can rent out a Ho, which he's going to say in a minute, I can rent out my money, and you'll pay. And he rented it out at a Zuz. He did it at Zuz a Pshita. Now, Zuz, a Pshita is 1/8 of a zuz. A zuz tzuri, a pshita is a zuz medina, which is 1/8 of a zuz tzuri, which basically means he was strangely charging, if he's really charging a pshita to a zuz, I don't know if it was a pshita per day for all the zuzet, or if he does it at that relationship, he's charging 12.5%, right, which is a pretty good return on his money. But he basically rents out the money and saying that's not considered to be big because I'm renting it. So kalu zuzet de Rav Chama. So Rav Chama's money went to, he lost all of his money, basically. He became, he lost his wealth. And that is because what the Gemara says, that people are malvi beribit, in the end, lose all their money. That all the, not only do they lose the profits, but they lose the keren. So that's, it's clear here that the Gemara views what Rav Chama did as really being beribit. So Husavar, what did Rav Chama think? Maishna mimara, right? What's the difference between renting out your hoe and renting out your money? I mean, if you can rent out your objects, right, why should it be any different between renting money and renting out a hoe? Velohi, the Gemara rejects this and says, Mara hadra be'ene v'yadia pachte. Right, a hoe, first of all, is returned intact. You have to return the same hoe that you borrowed. And number two is, I'm reading this like Rashi now, is v'yadia pachte, and the diminishment of value is known. Meaning that you can see that it was used. A hoe that's used is different than a new hoe. So you can see that the usage of the hoe, for instance, is what you're paying for because there's a diminishment in the value of the hoe. Zuze, number one, lo hadra be'enayu. Number two is, right, number one is for monies, you don't have to return the same money. That's the whole idea of a milva. We don't demand of you to return the exact same coins that you borrowed. You're supposed to return the equivalent value of what you borrowed, not the exact coinage that you borrowed. That's as opposed to the mara, that if you, for instance, if the hoe breaks, right, and if something happens to the hoe, is gneva aveda, you're responsible for the hoe to replace it, right? By monies, you just have to return the value. You don't have to return those exact coins. Now, why is it not by a, as Rashi points out, why by a hoe is it not considered to be a loan like the money? Why? Because what happens if the money, if you don't bring the money back? Right, you're responsible to get the money back no matter what happens to the money in the interim, because you borrowed value, not the coins. What happens to the hoe if it breaks, or there was some sort of ones machmat malacha? Then you're patur, right? You don't have to return the hoe. So that's why it's different. Monies, you will always have to return the value no matter what happens to the money, because you're not obligated to return the monies, you're obligated to return the value. So we don't care what happens to the money, you have to return that value. On the hand, by the hoe, you're responsible to return the hoe itself. And when you return the spade or the hoe to the owner, then there are exemptions for returning it. If something happens to the hoe while you are working with it, then you're not responsible. That's the p'tur of, right, machmat malacha. That when you do working while you're only machmat malacha, you don't have to return it to its owner. Because of that, it shows that that is chirut, and the monies are considered a milvet. But also, v'lo yada pachtei. Rashi says, even if he hands him back the same coins, would you know, is it obvious that the coins were used? I mean, what happened to the coins? If you hand him a shekel and he hands you back the shekel coin, why is there any difference between the shekel coin that he handed you and you gave it back to me? Even if you used the shekel coin in the interim, you went ahead and used it in the interim as a weight or as a counterbalance. Now you hand it back to the owner. Does the owner know any difference, or can he see any difference in his shekel coin? No. The same currency, the same way it works before. There's nothing changed in the item. So when he says, Rashi is suggesting that schirut has to do, number one, with the lack of obligation to be always return the item, number one. And number two is that you're actually compensating for the diminishment in value of the item that you use. That there's depreciation. And you're paying for the depreciation of the object. That's how schirut works, right? You rent a car. When you use the car's value is now, right, diminished. So you are compensating for that diminishment in value, aside from the other items, right, the profits and the other expenses that they have in taking care of the car, but you're paying for that diminishment in value. The other hand, when you borrow money, there is no diminishment in value, right?
They work together, though.
I mean, all right, assuming that, but it's not obvious that would change the value of the coin. I mean, it's not, is it usable at the same value in the same way as it was before? The answer is yes, right? And acquired something that's used, the car has real depreciation in the value. Right? We're assuming here that if you can turn the exact coins, it wouldn't be. Tosfos rejects this explanation, and we'll see in a second for why. Right? So that's Rashi's interpretation between a schirut and a milveh. It's because these are the two factors that differentiate them. Tosfos asks the question, and asks from Me'ila. We know by Me'ila that the Gemara talks about it by Me'ila, that there are different types of Me'ila. There's Me'ila where there is a diminishment or depreciation in the value of the object that's used, or there's Me'ila where the value of the object itself does not change in value. So there, the Gemara gives two different qualifications of when you're Mo'el. So for instance, by gold cups or glass drinking glasses. Over there, the Gemara says that when you turn the gold cups and you return the glasses, right, they're intact. They're the same way they were before. There's nothing changed about them. So it's not Mi'ila, you have to have Nene. The Nene has to be Nene Mi'pruta. You have to actually get a full Pruta's worth of Hana from the object because the object does not change in value. Whereas when it comes to objects where you consume or you change the value, depreciate the value of Hekdesh, there right away, so when you diminish the value of Hekdesh, that's what you're Chayav for. So now, Tosfos says, well, according to Rashi, it should be that if you rent out, if you lend out cups, these gold cups or glass cups, it should be a rebeat, according to Rashi. It should be a problem of rebeat. You should not be able to have schirut by these items.
There was also the other reason. There are two reasons, but you only need one.
Right. So the Tosfos says that he doesn't feel. He says, Asper chaviro katla v'kos shel zav v'tabat lo yidia pachtayu. Right, that they're not known. Their depreciation is not well known. Right, since their depreciation is not well known. Rashi divides up the two reasons. He says, first of all, right, number one is that you're responsible for the whole value. And then he says, even, right, if you were to return the same coins, which makes it an independent reason, even if you retain the same coins, the coins don't have depreciation in value. So that's Rashi's comment, that even if you return the coins themselves, so then it should look like schirut, nevertheless, go yodia pachte, which is a secondary reason. He gives a second reason independent of the first reason. So now, because the first reason doesn't apply anymore, right, because you're returning the actual coins. So now he does suggest over here that the same should apply to a broader set of items, not just money. Because there are other items where lo yidia pachtei. That's what Gemara tells us in other places. So Tosfos explains otherwise. Says that Tosfos to a hoe or a spade. When you give it to the individual, it's that you can't give him back another item. You have to give him back, right, the actual item itself, right. And therefore, right, the schar is not a schar milveh because you have to hand him back the object that you borrowed, right, or. Even if he let him lend out, notain the marlotzi, if he says to the guy, listen, take the spade, you can lend it out, do whatever you want with it, and you return me another spade. Right? Afam kain, mutali toschar. Right there, he can take it. Why? Right? Because by maras, chirut enu borvur halva'a, sheyosh lo reshut otzia, ala notain schirut avar pchat, shedivchat ayde melacha im yachzir socher be'enei. Right, that the reason that you pay money by the usage of an object is because you're paying for the diminishment in value of the object that you borrow, the usage that you use of the object. Right, of azuze, the Rav Chama ayamilve ulzerach hutzah hiskiram lo, v'lo bishvil kabbalat shum pchat. Right, why are you getting compensation by milve? It really has to do with why you're getting compensated for the item that the person uses over here. If you're getting compensated for the usage of the item, meaning that the depreciation or the diminishment in value is why you usually pay a person for this in this instance. Therefore, even in a case where he lends it out and it's not, there is no diminishment in value, or in a case where he says to him, you can give me a different hoe back or a different spade back, it's no problem. Even in that case, the compensation in the end is really for the depreciation of the object, the prat of the value of the object. The monies are an exchange or a compensation for that, even though you can set up the case in different ways where there won't be diminishment of value, where there won't be this. But nevertheless, generally in those cases, why are you paying compensation? Because there will be diminishment of value. On the other hand, when it comes to cash and you're lending money to the individuals, the reason that you're getting paid is not because of diminishment in value of the coins, even though, as we said, maybe there are times where there is some sort of diminishment value. But that's not why you get compensated back. You're assuming that you're just going to get the value back. You expect him to spend those coins and bring back different coins. And anyway, you expect him to give you back value, not coins. So what Tosfos is suggesting over here, it doesn't have to do with even in instances where you can replicate, right, the same scenario by coins that you have by a spade or a hoe, and that you can replicate the same case of spade and hoe by coins, that doesn't matter because it has to do with what is the relationship when we deal with these items. When you deal with cash, since cash in general is used to be spent, even if you don't spend them, it's irrelevant because they were given with the intention to spend them. If they're given with the intention to spend them, then you're, in your mind, you're lending him the money, halva'ah, right? In English, there's no differentiation in the word. In Hebrew, halva'ah, right, is the loan of money. Since you expect him to, right, use the monies, and therefore, when he's compensating you, he's compensating simply the fact that he's using the money, not for any diminishment in value of the coins, because the coins were given for their value, not, and then you have to replace the value, not the coins. The other hand, if the hoe or a spade, when you lend that out, right, when there, when the Yishuel, but really it's chibut, when he does a rental of such a property, then what's the intent is? Because you're going to diminish the value of the item. You're using the item. That usage of the item itself is what you're compensating for, not the ability to go spend it and give it out. Now, again, even if the relationship may be different, and he says, you know, go spend, you can replace the hoe or the spade, no problem. But even that relationship, the compensation is clearly for the usage of the item. So that's how Tosafot gets around the problem now with the silver, the gold cups, and the glass glasses, which is, even though there's no chat there, but that type of relationship, you're paying for the usage of the item itself. You're not paying, right, for the value to say that, here, go spend that money and then bring me back that value. No, he's saying, use the item, and you're paying for the usage of the item. And therefore, that's what the differentiation Tosafot makes in the case of, in between a skirut and a halva'ah.
Is that because most not done?
Yeah, no, exactly. It says, what was Rav Chama thinking? I mean, how could Rav Chama ever consider money and a hoe and a spade the same item? What was his avamina that he was thinking that? So Tosu says, oh, if you look at this tiny Tosu, it's very important. It says, So what you were just suggesting over here, that's what Tosu says, is that Rav Chama thought that he would take on responsibility of the money. He took all achrayut ve'onsin on the money. So he thought by taking on achrayut ve'onsin on the money, that would be enough to overcome the ribit aspect. That would make it exactly like, right, exactly like a hoe. Right, like what Rashi just said. If the hoe, when you have the responsibility for the onsin, the owner has the responsibility for the onsin, that makes it schirut. So what did Rav Chama say? I'll replicate that. I'll take on the onsin of the monies. If I take on the onsin of the monies, it should look exactly like a schirut. If it looks like a schirut, I should be able to do it with my monies as well. Because now, a poskim, what does this tosus mean? Because over here, only accepted onsin. What happens if he also takes on responsibility for gneva and aveda? I mean, over here, he just took on the onsin. What happens if he takes on, in addition to that, gneva and aveda? And then, can he make the money into a schirut? So it happens to be the Gra quotes of here from the Trumas of Deshin. The Trumas of Deshin says, that's enough. If you take on responsibility for Gneiv and Aveda, then it becomes like Schirut. You can make money into a Schirut as well. Although the Gra says, well, Nira, he doesn't think that makes sense. He says, it doesn't make, this is all the things with money or halva, no matter how you recover, how much responsibility you take on, you can't change money into a Schirut from being a halva. Right now, Omar Rabba, Shar Leila Inche, Lameimar Leila Chabre, the person can say to his friend, Helich David Zuzay, person can pay off. So for instance, over here, right, we have three parties involved. Right? You have Shaul that comes along and says, listen, I want Tzvi needs a loan. So right, he goes to picks someone and he says, listen, right, we'll pick Josh. So he takes Josh and says, Josh, can you really Tzvi really needs a loan? I want you to lend him money. Here is four zuz to lend Tzvi money. So basically, you're compensating him to lend money to Tzvi. So Rebbe says, no problem with that. Why? Lo asra Torah le-ribit, haba milovel malveh. Ribit, the Torah asers, or the problem of ribit, is simply part of the relationship between the borrower and the creditor. The debtor and the creditor. Money's an exchange between the debtor, or favors, or anything between the debtor and creditor, that's ribit. If there's a third party involved, that is no longer ribit, because that's not part of the relationship, the malveh and the loveh. That's to do with an independent third party. That's not classified as ribit. So what Shaul did is permitted. Now, Bama Rabba, Sharle the Insha the Meimar le Chabre, Shakilach Arba Zuzay. So then he can also say to a person, take four zuz, V'amar le Leplon the Uzvan Zuzay. Alright, so now, again, let's say the case over here. So Tzvi wanted to borrow money. He says to Shaul, I know you're good friends with Josh. So he says, Tzvi goes to pay Shaul for Zuz, and he says, tell Josh to lend money to me. Again, he says, fine. That is, no problem. Why? Zuzay, my time up. Why is Tzvi compensating Shaul over here? Schar Amira Kushapyo. He's paying him for his, right, his efforts, his lobbying efforts. Right? That's like a lobbyist. A lobbyist goes, why do you compensate the lobbyist? Because they are able to convince others to do something. So the three over here is being Shaul. He's convincing him, right? He's going to convince Shaul. He's going to convince Josh to lend him the money. So again, there's no repeat because Tzvi is not paying Josh. He's paying Shaul to convince Josh to give the loan. So both of these are permitted. Now, Kiha, Dabba Mamari, Rav Papa. So this is similar to a case that we had with Abba Mar, who's the son of Rav Papa. Shakil Upna Dikiri Mikirai. He used to take off the smushed wax or the crushed wax at the bottom of the barrel from the wax sellers. Barmalei Lavua. And then he used to tell his father, Uzvinu Zuzay, lend them money. This is the exact relationship. Rav Papa is a creditor. The wax sellers are debtors or want money from Rav Papa. They want to borrow money from Rav Papa. So what do? They used to go pay his son. They pay his son to tell his father to lend to them. So it's the same relationship over here. They're basically paying his son to lobby the father to lend them money. Says, how do you let your son eat repeat? How do you let your son collect repeat over here? Over here he's going around to all the wax sellers taking money and then you're lending them money. Says Amalei, Koki Hayi Rebita Anechom. Says, all that type of interest we can eat all day. Bring it on. That's our interest. Why? Lo Asu Tala Rebita Bami Lo Vela Malveh. The interest that is Asur is when it comes from the debtor to the creditor. Hachas Karamira Koshakil Vishari. Over here, they're paying the son to lobby the father. They're paying the son to lobby the father. That is permitted, just like what Baba said before. Now, we have to assume, I guess we have to assume, that his son and him had independent ownership, that he was a gadol and he was not Sumech Shulchan Aviv. Otherwise, then it would just be an effective transaction where they're paying the son that's really Rav Papa, that he's a yad of the father. So you have to assume here that he's independent of his father, but they're paying the son to lobby the father in order to get loans from the father, and that's permitted. Next Mishnah. Shemit Parav Chamor, Chodavar Shul Sevel Chel. You can do these relationships in a situation where the previous Mishnah dealt with animals that could not support their own Amel and their own mizonot. Over here we have animals that support themselves by doing work. For instance, they can plow, they're short, they can plow, can do work. So now, the compensation or the salary for the individual when they split the property, they don't have to give an independent salary, it's the work itself of the animal, then can, right, fill in as the salary or the compensation. So then, Ochel, he said, then he said, Ochel the Mechsa. Then you don't have any problem. When they have to do, when they split it right away, and you give it away, then Chokim, you have to split it right away. Makom Shnagula Gadel, Yagdilu. Then a place that they, the Midah is to bring them up, then you have to Yagdilu. Now, the first case, when we say Miyad, that's qualified for what we said in the Gemara before. That's the 30 days or the 50 days. Obviously, Yagdilu means beyond that point in time. So it all depends on the Minhag HaMakom. But the minimum is that 30-day or the 50-day window, even the place where they're Chulek right away. Shemim Leomer, Shemin Egel Imimo, Mesiach Imimo. So this is what we had yesterday. We quoted this in the Gemara yesterday, that you can give over a calf with its mother or a pony or a young donkey with its mother. Mafriz Al Sadeu. And you can be Mafriz Al Sadeu, but it's a Mishum repeat. And you can invest in the property and not worry about repeat. We'll get to that in a second in the Gemara. There's a Rashi wrote that there's two Girsot in the Mishnah. One is Mafrin, which is from the word Peru, right, to expand, or Mafriz, which Rashi calls over here is Machivu Magdil, to improve the property. Either way, the term or the verb that's being used over here is that the person's investing in the property is not a problem. So if a person borrows money to invest in the property, that's not a problem, and he pays, even though he's going to have to pay more for it down the road. So we'll see in a second what that is in the Gemara. Kate said, what is the case over here? A person rents out a field from his friend for 10 kur chitim, 10 kur of wheat per year. Lend me 200 zuz, and I will invest those 200 zuz in the property itself. And then I will pay you, instead of 10 kur per shana, I'll pay you 12 kur per shana. Mutar. So what just happened over here? I just lent you 200 zuz. So now, instead of paying me 10 that you paid me before, you're paying me 12. So basically, what am I doing? I'm paying you 2 more because you lent me 200 zuz. So why isn't it repeat? Why isn't it repeat? It's because what he's doing with the monies. What is he doing with the monies? He's investing them in the property. By borrowing the money and investing them in the property, what is he actually doing now? He's improving the value. These are leasehold improvements. He's improving the value of the property, and now the property would rent out for more on the market. So by improving the value of the property and now would rent out for more on the market, all he's doing is adjusting the rental price to the market, what the market would bear now for such an improved property. So he's not compensating extra for the loan, but rather he's compensating him for the better property that he now has, which will produce more and have more profits. Aval ein mafriz lo al chanut v'lo la spina. That is not true of a store and a boat. If I say he's the individual, listen, he rented out the store for such and such a amount. So he's rented out for 100 shekel per month, and then he goes in and he says, "Lend me 200 shekel so I can go buy merchandise to put into the store." Right, and then if you lend me the 200, then I'll give you back. Instead of giving you 10 per month, 100 per month, I'll give you 150 per month. That is not permitted. Why? Because the money he's giving to invest is not an investment in the store itself. It's not an improvement in the value of the store. It's right buying merchandise to sell, which is basically still a loan to him. By having a loan outstanding and now paying more for that loan, right, that is not permitted because the excess rent that you're paying, or the more rent that you're paying now, is not because you increased the value of the store, it's because I lent you money for the merchandise that's in the store, and the same can be true of a boat, for the supplies on a boat. So there's times when you can also create or simulate the status of a field with a store and a boat. What is that? If he borrows money, right, to actually improve the store itself, by painting pictures in the store, by making murals or painting pictures in the store, which will attract more customers to come to the store. So if he does that, if he does it better, if he takes the money to improve the layout of the store, if he does it, if he invests in the store itself, then it's permitted again because, right, he's improved the value of the store and now he's paying more rent because he has a better rental. Right, the same thing with the spina, la sola iskaria. If he puts in the supplies of a boat, the same will apply over here. When he puts in supplies of a boat, now he's improved the value of the boat. He can rent it out for more, he can take more skhura with it, whatever it is. So now, the tzarabat shurta, why is by a store where he puts in a picture? The tzavu bainche, people gather there. And then he gets more profits from that. Spina, la sola iskaria, by a spina boat, he puts in more supplies, maybe he puts in anchors and better, puts in a better mast. Whatever he does, came into Shapir Iskariot, since he has now a better mast and a better boat, right? Tvei, Agra Tvei, you can make more money from it. So now, Spinata, a boat, Amarav, Agra Ufagra. Right, when it comes to a boat, you pay the rent, and you have to take on the diminishment in value. You get both, you have to pay, the owner of the boat gets both of these. He gets the rental for the boat, plus, if the boat diminishes in value, you've got to compensate him for the diminishment in value. So, Amalei Rav Kahana, Rav Asi, the Rav, he says, they said, no way. Iagra, if he's renting the boat, lo vagra, then he can't be responsible for the, right, diminishment in value, because then he's a socher. If he's a socher, we just saw before, a socher is, right, patur min ha-onsin, when it comes to machmat malacha. So if he's a socher, then you can't demand from him the pagra. Ipagra, right, loagra. And if he's taking on the diminishment, which means basically it becomes a halva, because he's assessing the value of the boat day one, and now he's got to compensate him for the diminishment of value, then he can't take rent from it because that becomes repeat. If you demand him pay back the exact value of the boat. Shoshotik Rav. Rav was silent, he had nothing to answer them. I'm Rav Shish, it's my tongue, Shoshotik Rav. Why was Rav silent? Lo Shmilei had the Tanya, he didn't hear it of Rav Braisa. Afal Gav, Shamru, Ein Kabin, Sonu Barzel, Misrael. Aval mekabim tzon barzel min anachrim. So here over here, tzon barzel, which is a term that we usually find by ketubot. Tzon barzel. So Rashi over here, it's a very interesting Rashi. It's worth reading just because Rashi tells us what's the derivative of tzon barzel. Why does the Gemara always use this term tzon barzel? So if you look in Rashi down in mekabim tzon barzel, it's four lines from the bottom, five words in. It says v'hainu tzon barzel. Why are they called tzon barzel? Shekashe kebarzel. They're strong like metal. The value never diminishes for the balim. Why? Because we assess the value day one, and the balim always get back that exact value. No matter what happens to the item in the interim, they will always get compensated for any diminishment in value. That's true by the ketubahs also. But if ketubah, the woman brings in possessions into the possessions of the marriage, those possessions, if they are assessed day one, then when she gets divorced, or when she gets her ketubah later on, she's entitled to that exact value. There's no change in that value. That this relationship was mostly done with, right, these animals, these types of animals of tzon. So why is it called tzon uberzel? The barzel part describes the relationship. And it's called tzon uberzel because that type of relationship was mostly done with tzon. So that's where the derivative of this term, tzon uberzel. So now, a person may not take tzon barzel from Israel, right? Because if he does an iskav, they do this partnership we've seen in our Mishnah, that's problematic. Why? Because you're going to take 50% of the sakar. You guys are going to split the profits. But he's going to be responsible for the diminishment in value. That's not going to work. Because if he's responsible for the diminishment in value, then it becomes a halva'a. If it's a halva'a, then you can't work for free for you on the other side. But you are allowed to take Sona Brazil min anachrim. Right, that you are allowed to take them from non-Jews, obviously, because there's no problem of interest payments between you. Aval, amru, but nevertheless they say, Hashem para lechaveiro, v'amarlo, arei paratcha suei elai v'shloshim dinar, v'yani alecha, ani ale lecha selah b'chodesh, mutar, l'chi shelo asa damim. So now, a person who is Hashem para lechaveiro, he says that we assess the value of the par today, v'amarlo, arei paratcha suei elai v'shloshim dinar, that I will take on the responsibility for the para up to 30 dinar. That's not the true value of the para, but that I am willing to take responsibility up to a certain value of the item. And I'll pay you a selah a month to use the para. Right? He didn't make it into money. And where it says, what do you mean? He did. He just assessed the value at 30 dinar. Right? That he didn't make its value while it's still alive. Right? But rather, after its death. Meaning that he will not compensate for any diminishment in value. All he says is, listen, if I bring you back your para, there's nothing to talk about. If I hand you back your para, there's nothing to talk about. I rented your para, I used it, that's why I'm renting it, and I can hand it back to you. The only way that it will come into compensation is what? If the para dies. Since if he dies, I accept that I have to pay you a 30 fixed rate of 30 dinar if it passes away, even if that's the value, close to value, less than value, whatever it is. He says that's the only instance where I will compensate you. So because of that, it's not a halva anymore. It becomes a schirut with an extra condition in it. It's a schirut with a condition. If it dies, then I will compensate you for the death of this animal. Because here he's not taking on all the hefsed. He's not taking on all the downside. But the fact that he's not taking on all the downside, it's a schirut and not a halva'a. So the same thing could be said over here. Why don't we say the same thing by Rav? Right? Rav could have said the same thing here about the Sfina. The Sfina, he doesn't pay him if it comes back, the boat is... Right, used. He's not going to pay him. What does he have to pay him for the boat? If the boat sinks, if the boat is destroyed, if the boat is totally lost. So that's the same situation over here. You can have a schirut that is a relationship where you compensate if the item is lost entirely. Not where you compensate for diminishment in value, but simply if the item is totally lost. That's an okay relationship. That's not mefseh k'ribit. It's not mefseh k'ribit because it's not halva anymore. It's a schirut and it's a relationship of rental and not a relationship of a loan. So Amar Papa Hilchasa, the loch is Sfina Agro for Agro. The loch is like Rav, basically, which is based on this price over here. That you can take Agro, right? And you can rent it, and you can take on yourself the right diminishment in value as long as you're not taking that zuba, meaning that diminishment in value, but not total destruction of value, right? V'nagu b'nei kufra agra b'shat mashicha, pagra b'shat shvira. So the minhag of the b'nei kufra, where they used to take the rental at the time of the mashicha, at the time of the original agreement. In pagra, they used to take the diminishment of value b'shat shvira, when it broke. So where it says, atu b'minhago talya milsa. What is that, the fact that they were no hate to do this, have anything to do with the halacha? Right? Why is that a halachic determination that they were at a minhag? So where it says, no. So it says at the minhag talya milsa, mishum de masnisa tanya, right, minhag. Right, so that was because the brisa laid out for us the way in which one does it. The minhag was to do it like the brisa, which is that you can accept rental as long as you are not the person who's accepting the rent. The renter is not exposed to the diminishment in value, but only exposed to the what? Total loss of the item. Shvira, if it's broken, or if it's not, not usable anymore. If it's not at the point where it's not usable anymore, then he has to replace it. That's fine, because that's not considered zula milsa. That's not considered, you're not exposed to the hefsed in between, which is the usage of the property. That becomes rentable, like we said before, a compensation for the pchat, which is the rental item, and therefore it's considered schirut and not a halva.